So, Balihi, Maharaj Bali. Mahaindram, the King of Heaven. Dasabhihi, with ten. Tribhihi, with three. Airavatam, Airavata, carrying Indra. Shadahe, by arrows. Chatubhihi, by four arrows. Chaturaha, the four. Mahan, mounted soldiers. Ekena, by one. Aruham, the driver of the elephants. Archayat, attacked. So translation, Maharaj Bali then attacked Indra with 10 arrows and attacked Airavata, Indra's carrier elephant, with 3 arrows. With 4 arrows, he attacked the 4 horsemen guarding Airavata's legs, and with 1 arrow, he attacked the driver of the elephant. So you can repeat, Maharaj Bali then attacked Indra with 10 arrows and attacked Airavata, Indra's carrier elephant. Three arrows. With 4 arrows, he attacked the 4 horsemen, guarding Airavata's legs. And with 1 arrow, he attacked the driver of the elephant. So purport by his divine grace. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Now, these are very short purports or no purports for the next few verses, so we're going to keep reading. Again, the word Vahan refers to soldiers on horseback who protected the legs of the carrier elephants. According to the system of military arrangement, the legs of the elephant bearing the commander were also protected. So, I guess we'll just continue reading. Satana patata shakras tavagbir sigravikramaha chachida nishitarvalair. Before Bali Maharaj's arrows could reach him, Indra, king of heaven, who was expert in dealing with arrows, smiled and counteracted the arrows with arrows of another type known as bhula, which were extremely sharp. Text 43. Sasha karmottamam viksha durmasha shaktimadite tamtvalantim ahol. Kabam Hastastam Machinandadaki. When Bali Maharaj saw the expert military activities of Indra, he could not restrain his anger. Thus he took up another weapon known as Shakti, which blazed like a great firebrand. But Indra cut that weapon to pieces while it was still in Bali's hand. Text 44. Tata Shulam Dataprasang. The tastomaram rishtayaha yad yat shastram samadhyat sarvam tad achinad vibahu. Therefore, one by one, Bali Maharaj used the lance, prasa, tomara, rishtis, and other weapons. But whatever weapons he took up, Indra immediately cut them to pieces. Text 45. Asasarajata surim mayam. Antadhana gato suraha tatha pradura buchchoila surani kopari paro prabho. My dear king, Bali Maharaj then disappeared and resorted to demoniac illusions. A giant mountain generated from illusion then appeared above the heads of the demigod soldiers. Tatoni petus tarafu. Dayamana Navanina Shilasa Kanka Shikarash Achurnayancho Tvishadvagam. From that mountain fell trees blazing in a forest fire. Chips of stone with sharp edges like picks also fell and smashed the heads of the demigod soldiers. Text 47. Mahoraga samupetur danda shuka svatsav rikshikaha singhav yagravarahascha mardayanto mahagajaha. Scorpions, large snakes, and many other poisonous animals, as well as lions, tigers, boars, and great elephants, all began falling upon the demigod soldiers, crushing everything. Text 48. Yatu danyascha shatasya shulahosta vivasasaha chindi bindi divadanyash tatarachogana prabho. O my king, many hundreds of male and female carnivorous demons, completely naked, sounds like a rainbow festival, and carrying tridents in their hands, then appeared, crying the slogans, cut them to pieces, pierce them. Text 49. Tato maha gana vyomdi gambira purusha swanaha angaran mumuchur vatar ahatastana yit. Nadabaha. Fierce clouds, harassed by strong winds, then appeared in the sky. Rumbling very gravely with the sound of thunder, they began to shower live coals. Shristo daityena sumakon, vani swasana sanataki, samvartaka ivatyu gro. A great devastating fire created by Bali Maharaj began burning all the soldiers of the demigods. This fire, accompanied by blasting winds, seemed as terrible as the Samvartaka fire, which appears at the time of the dissolution. Text 51. Tatasamudra udvella sarvata pratyadrishyata vachanda vater udhyuhuta taranga varta bishana. Thereafter, whirlpools and sea waves, agitated by fierce blasts of wind, appeared everywhere, before everyone's vision in a furious flood. Text 52. Evam daichar maha mayar alaksha gati birane svijamana sumayasu vishedu sura sainikaha. While this magical atmosphere in the fight was being created by the invisible demons, who were expert in such illusions, the soldiers of the demigods became morose. Text 53. Natatprati vitim yutra Vidurindra Dayonpa Jata Pratura Bhutatra Bhagavan Vishvabhavanaha. O king, when the demigods could find no way to counteract the activities of the demons, they wholeheartedly meditated upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the creator of the universe, who then immediately appeared. Text 54. Tata suparnam sakrit hungri pallava vishanga vasa navakanja lochana adrishyata stayuda baru latat shri kastu banagriya kirita kundalaha. The Supreme Personality of God, whose eyes resemble the petals of a newly blossomed lotus, sat on the back of Garuda, spreading his lotus feet over Garuda's shoulders, dressed in yellow decorated by the Kostuba gem and the goddess of fortune, and wearing an invaluable helmet and earrings. The Supreme Lord, holding various weapons in his eight hands, became visible to the demigods. Text 55. Tasmin praviste surakuta karmaja mayavine shur magina mahiyasa swapno yataki pratibodagate Purishpati sarva vipadam vimokshanam. As the dangers of a dream cease when the dreamer awakens, the illusions created by the jugglery of the demons were vanquished by the transcendental prowess of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as soon as he entered the battlefield. Indeed, simply by remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes free from all dangers. Very important. And one more verse. Text 56. Trishtva mride garuda vaham iba viva avidyasulam mahino nata kalene mihi talni laya garuda vamurdi patat grihitva tenaganam nripas avaham arem tri dishaha. O king, when the demon Kalanemi was carried by a lion, saw that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, carried by Garuda, was on the battlefield, the demon immediately took his trident, whirled it, and discharged it at Garuda's head. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the master of the three worlds, immediately caught the trident. With the very same weapon, he killed the enemy, Kalanemi, along with his carrier, the lion. So, purport. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya says, Kalenem Myateya Sarve Karina Nihotapi Sukreno Jivutha Shanta Punastinaiva Patitaha. Kalanemi and all the other demons were killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari. And when Shukracharya, their spiritual master, brought them back to life, they were again killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we can speak a little bit now. So, Om Ganat Vananda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Minitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, Shukracharya, the spiritual master of the demons, had this one power, one ability called Mrityu Sanjeevani. That basically means that he would bring someone back from life after they had died, as long as their bodies had not been completely, like, immolated. If the bodies were completely immolated, he couldn't bring them back to life, or cremated, immolated, destroyed in any other way. So the demigods, this is an interesting story in the Mahabharata, and also it's partially touched upon in the Srimad Bhagavatam and some of the commentaries. The demigods became very upset because he had this particular ability. So what they did is they thought, well, we have to learn the same ability. And so they thought, let's send one of our people to learn how to do this Mrityu Sanjeevani. And so Brahaspati, the priest of the demigods, he had a son named Kacha. And he sent his son Kacha to Shukracharya to become his disciple. So there was so much, let's say, chivalry and etiquette, even in those days, because nowadays you don't find that, that even though Shukracharya understood that Kacha was the son of his enemy, he still instructed him in the Mrityu Sanjeevani. And I'll explain a little bit about that. And as far as the etiquette is concerned, we even find that Dronacharya instructed Dhrishtadyumna in the martial arts when Dronacharya understood that Dhrishtadyumna was meant to kill him. Dhrishtadyumna came out of the fire with Draupadi, and he was a manifestation of the anger of Drupada towards Dronacharya. But still, they observed this etiquette. There was this, like, chivalrous relationship, and we're seeing this in the different fighting that's going on. So anyway, so Kacha, he goes to Shukracharya and he serves Shukracharya for like 100 years as a menial servant. And Shukracharya gives him this mantra. The mantra is the Mrityu Sanjeevani mantras. And then Shukracharya is very pleased with him. But there's a problem. And the problem is that Shukracharya's daughter, Devayani has actually fallen in love with Kacha. And this is Bhagavatam's story also. And so she's fallen completely in love with Kacha, but Kacha, at the same time, has the right attitude towards the spiritual master's daughter. Because the spiritual master is considered to be the father. And so the spiritual master's children or the spiritual master's wife, they have a family relationship with the disciple. And actually, this is how Gurukulas were meant to be. I mean, at least the ashram Gurukulas. And one of the reasons we have problems in ISKCON with our Gurukulas, with the ashram Gurukulas, because the Gurukulas were meant to be a Brahmin and his wife taking care of the kids. It wasn't meant to be Brahmacharis taking care of other Brahmacharis. See, that was the mistake we made in ISKCON. It was actually meant to be a husband and wife. They would take care of the kids, the students, the disciples, and the disciples would have a very nice, let's say, family relationship with the guru and his wife and the guru's family. And, and the guru's wife would actually serve as sort of a surrogate mother. Because everybody, when they're being brought up, needs a mother, or mother figure, isn't it? And father, two things. And whether it's the actual blood mother, that sounds horrible. Genetic mother, let's say. That sounds a little better.
Birth
or genetic mother. Whether it's the birth mother or the surrogate mother, if the relationship is there, it helps the child develop properly psychologically. If the relationship is not there, the child will not develop psychologically with the father or mother. So anyway, so getting back to the story, so Kacha, he had that sort of relationship with Shukracharya. He was like his father, even though it wasn't his blood father. Sorry, blood again. Birth father. Always say blood. Because we're reading this story, it's very bloody. So it wasn't his birth father. So, and his Shukracharya's daughter, Devayani, was like his sister. But Devayani didn't understand this. She came up to Kacha right when he was about finished with the studying of the Mritya Sanjeevani and learning the mantra. And she said to him, "I love you. I want to marry you." And he basically said, "Not really, sister." Just like Arjuna, when he was approached by Urvasi, and he accepted Urvasi like his mother, because Urvasi was actually one of the ancestors of his whole dynasty. This is described in the Bhagavatam. So he said to Urvasi, you know, Mataji, or mother, as the case may be, and that really aggravated Urvasi. In the same way, Devayani became completely upset that she wasn't accepted, and she, as a result, cursed Kacha. And she cursed Kacha that he would not be proficient or able to utilize this Mritya Sanjeevani mantra. And then he counter-cursed Devayani. He said to Devayani, "Therefore you will not marry a Brahmin." So later on, of course, she got married to King Yayati. Everyone remembers this story in the Bhagavatam? Anyway, King Yayati found her naked in the bottom of a well because she had been fighting with her friend Sarmishta, who was a Kshatriya lady. And somehow or other, they got married. Anyway, that story is there in the Bhagavatam. But Kacha was able to instruct the other demigods in the use of the Mritya Sanjeevani. So the demigods actually did get that particular science. So that's the Mritya Sanjeevani. And you read many times how Shukracharya is bringing the demons back to life. And also, there's another story about another form of the Mritya Sanjeevani in the Ramayana, where the Mritya Sanjeevani are considered to be herbs that are in the Himalayas. And when Lakshman was pierced by this lance by Indrajit, Hanuman was actually sent, Lakshman and Ram were actually
unconscious, Hanuman was actually sent to the Himalayas, and he brought back the mountain, and the mountain had the Mrityu Sanjeevani, and that Mrityu Sanjeevani was applied by the doctor. And some stories it says the doctor was actually Ravana's doctor, but that's not actually true. It was actually the doctor of Rama's army. That's a difference. In the movie it shows like that Ravana's doctor is kidnapped by Ravana, by Hanuman and brought to cure Lakshman, but it's not actually what happened. It was the doctor of the monkey army. Sushena. But it wasn't a demon doctor, it was actually the doctor. So anyway, so there's so many stories of this Mrityu Sanjeevani, and even in the West, there was some hint that this Mrityu Sanjeevani could be achieved in Florida. Remember it? The Fountain of Youth? Heard about that?
Ponce de Leon.
Yeah, Ponce de Leon. He came to Florida to try to find the Mrityu Sanjeevani, and unfortunately he just found a lot of old people in Miami Beach getting ready to die. Not really. But, so anyways, that's Mrityu Sanjeevani. Anyway, we can go on. That's all I have to say about the Mrityu Sanjeevani. So we'll continue reading and finish up the chapter. Text 57. Mali sumalyati valo yudi peta turyach chakrena krita shirasavata valya vamstam ohocha tigma gadayahanad anda jendram tavat shiro chinadarer nadator rinadayaha. So last verse of the chapter. Thereafter, two very powerful demons named Mali and Sumali were killed by the Supreme Lord, who severed their heads with his disc. Then Malyavan, another demon, attacked the Lord. With a sharp club, the demon, who was roaring like a lion, attacked Garuda, the Lord of the birds, who were born from eggs. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original person, used his disc to cut off the head of that enemy also. So thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports, the 8th canto, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Battle Between the Demigods and the Demons. So I just want to comment on one other thing, that one of the verse here, which is verse 55. As the dangers of a dream cease, when the dreamer awakens, the illusions created by the jugglery of the demons were vanquished by the transcendental prowess of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as soon as he entered the battlefields. And what I'm going to talk about is, indeed, simply by remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes free from all dangers. So as far as we are concerned, remembrance means the holy names of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Hariras Thakur comments that even by this Namabhas chanting, Namabhas means accidental chanting, chanting meaning something else, chanting derisively, chanting humorously, then all the inauspicious elements such as ghosts and demons flee. So sometimes devotees get into this whole thing that, oh yeah, I'm haunted by ghosts, or that's bothering me, or that. But if you're chanting Hare Krishna, ghosts can't approach you. And Srila Prabhupada, it's interesting, Srila Prabhupada sometimes acted as a ghostbuster. And there's several stories that Srila Prabhupada told about that. One is, of course, is the famous story of John Lennon's estate. In John Lennon's estate, there was a house where the gardener lived. And this house was supposed to be haunted by ghosts. And Prabhupada simply went in and was tapping on the wall and chanting Hare Krishna. And Prabhupada explained that in this way, the ghosts, during the day, they actually live in the walls. So if you tap on the walls and chant Hare Krishna at the same time, it disturbs them and then they go away. And then the other story about the ghosts is actually a little more interesting because it involves Prabhupada's business acumen. Prabhupada described, and I forget which city it was, that there was a place that Prabhupada wanted to acquire for his his business. Prabhupada was in the pharmaceutical business, for pharmaceutical manufacturing. And so properties were generally very expensive, but there was one property that was extremely cheap. And that property was extremely cheap because it was known to be haunted by ghosts. So Prabhupada, being very intelligent, he bought that property. And everyone was saying, you know, why should you buy that property? That property is haunted by ghosts. You're never going to be able to do anything. And then Prabhupada got rid of the ghosts, and he got a good deal. So anyway, by the chanting of Hare Krishna, not only do ghosts get eradicated, but all your karma, including what's called the parabdha karma. There's different types of karma. There's aparabdha, parabdha, kuta, bija, all these different, parts of the process of karma and the karmic reaction. You know, kuta, of course, means inclination. We have an inclination towards sinful activity, and then the bija means the seed of desire for that sinful activity. And then aparabdha means that which is not yet manifest. You know, we've done some sinful activity, or done some, not only sinful activity, of course, pious activity also has a karmic reaction. Just like Prabhupada said, if you help someone in this lifetime, then you have to take another birth, so at least help someone materially. Then you have to take another birth so he can help you in the next life. So in other words, you're still bound by the law of karma, whether it's good karma or bad karma. So aparabdha means that karma which is not yet manifest, and parabdha karma means the karma that is manifest. And that's generally indicating your present situation. That means your body, some legal difficulties you may have, or some wealth you may have, because that's from good karma. And it's stated that by chanting even Namavas, even that parabdha karma becomes eradicated. And devotees, I've seen many devotees don't have that faith in the holy names, that they think, oh, we have to do so many other things for our karma. We have to wear different jewels, you know, rings or something like that, sapphire. And of course, the astrologers are very happy with this because they can make money. You know, they diagnose you, they say, you know, the real problem is, you know, you got your Rahu or whatever. And you have to do this to counteract, chant this mantra. And they give, sometimes I've seen the devotees, they get these demigod mantras. Anyone seen that before? I'm sure you've seen that. The devotees get demigod mantras and they're told to worship Durga for like, you know, 3 years to overcome the effects of whatever in the Saturn period, or overcome the effects of their bad karma or something like that. And that's really not what Prabhupada taught us, or what's taught by Haridas Thakur or any of our acharyas. That you simply have to chant the holy names. Now, at the same time, and also another point, as Prabhupada said, every time you chant and dance, the lines in your hands change. In other words, your fortune becomes, you get good fortune instead of bad fortune, good spiritual fortune. So therefore, one may question, why am I still suffering? You know, why do I still have this disease? Why am I still getting old? Why are all these things occurring? Well, several explanations. One, of course, is the token reaction, how Krishna has reduced whatever reaction you're supposed to have, and it's directly under the jurisdiction of Krishna, too. It's not karma anymore. It's Krishna giving you a token, for several reasons, to remind you of what you did, you know, who you are, keep you humble. Another reason is that Krishna's giving you these tests to try to purify you. But of course, the tests purify you when you respond properly to the tests. It's like a test in the university doesn't teach you anything unless you actually interact or study for the test. Simply taking a test doesn't purify you, but how you react to the test is what purifies you or gives you some education in the material world. So there's different reasons why we are continuing to suffer in spite of Krishna eradicating our karma, even by the parabdha, by the namavas chanting. And another reason is, even with the pure devotees, Krishna arranges things to glorify them. Just like when one enters some sporting competition like the Olympics, there's challenges. I mean, for example, you have the high jump. And, you know, let's say you made the high jump like 6 inches high. What would be so exciting? Everybody's watching on TV and someone jumps over 6 inches. But it doesn't glorify the person. But if you make it, I don't know, how high do they go? Does anyone know about high jumps?
7.5 feet.
You do know about these things. 7.5 feet, or 8 feet, or 9 feet. Or the marathon, just like we have one devotee here who runs marathons. And, you know, I always ask him, have you won? You know, what position have you taken? So it's much more heroic and exciting when one has a challenge. So Krishna arranges these challenges for his devotees too. And also to glorify the devotees so people can appreciate the devotees' pastimes and like that. So it's not karma. It's directly arranged by Krishna. And so how do we respond to these things? The Bhagavatam tells us, Tate no kampam sushamikshamana punjanabhatma kritam vipakam ridba apurvir pridanam namaste jiveti yo mukti padesadayava. Then one understands this is simply a token reaction given for my past activities in this world. Tate no kampam sushamikshamana. But then one also goes on serving Krishna with his body, mind, and words. And if one does that, in spite of all these different challenges that are directly given to us by Krishna, it's not karma, you can't overcome your challenges by getting diamonds and sapphires and rupees on your hand, or chanting demigod mantras. When one understands this, then goes on serving Krishna with his mind, body, and words, then one becomes the fit recipient or inheritor, as this verse says, of pure devotional service. So that is our test. So the point here Prabhupada is making, and the verse makes, indeed, simply by remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes free from all dangers. So any questions or comments? We have 2 minutes left in class. Yes, Dichup.
That verse, Tatin Kampan, also applies to the Kuta?
Kuta, Bija. But as soon as we stop remembering the Lord and chanting, then these things, these anarthas, are not completely, absolutely gone until one reaches prema. This is described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. They can always come back due to association, due to inattention. Of course, Bharat Maharaj, he was inattentive in his performance of devotional service, and he became attached improperly to a deer. So the inclination came back. And he was, basically you could say, he was doing pious activity, like assisting this deer, but his attachment was not exactly pious. So the inclination came back when he was inattentive, even though he's on the stage of bhava. And only on the stage of prema are you absolutely free. You may be completely free at bhava. That means it's not there, but you're not absolutely free because it could come back if you're not attentive insofar as your association. So association is very important to protect one. And association, of course, with one's mind, too. I mean, obviously, with Bharat Maharaj, there was no one else around other than the deer, the baby deer, to have bad association with, but it was his mind, sentimentality, that came back. So, yes, so as long as one is remembering Krishna, all these inauspicious things go away. But as soon as you forget Krishna, because we're not on the highest platform of devotional service, these things can come back. It's something like in Holland, you know, this person with a finger in the dike. You know the story? He had to keep his finger. You know this story? Anyway, read about it. Google it. So anyway, so there was a... And Holland is below the sea surface. Yeah, the whole Amsterdam, whatever, is below the surface of the sea, below sea level. So they have to have a dike. And once upon a time, there was a hole in the dike, and if the water had flown through that hole, it would have gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. So this one nice boy, his name was Krishnadas, He put his he was a devotee. He chanted Hare Krishna, put his finger in the dike. But having taken it out, all the water would have rushed through and inundated the whole country, the whole city at least, of Amsterdam. Therefore, the moral of the story is you got to keep your finger in the dike or the, keep remembering Krishna. Kirtaniya Siddhahari. You can remember that story. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Radhika Lokananda ki jai.